Behind the news. Time check. It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, Labour consultant attributes the recent standoff between organised labour and the PURC to our system of education. Is he justified? Police service gets new constituted council. What direction should the council take to deal with logistics and other challenges? A security analyst will share his thoughts on it. And is punishment for basic school girls who get pregnant in the course of the education the best option to curbing teenage pregnancy? We will be finding answers to this. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions via text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. But first, Barbara Yakubu is here with a summary of the day's news.
Thank you, Agatha. Ghanaians and civil society groups have expressed satisfaction about the decision of the government to absorb 25% of tariff hikes on utility to cushion workers. The Forum for Governance and Justice has also lauded the decision by government to absorb the 25% difference. Meanwhile, the TUC says ECG owes consumers who buy credit between 1st October and now in arrears of 25% and will credit consumers any time they purchase credit. TUC is also demanding pay rise for workers before June next year, when consumers will pay for the full cost of recovery. President John Mahama has tasked the newly constituted police council to support the police administration to redefine its strategic objectives in line with modern-day policing. He said the challenges confronting the police service are enormous but surmountable through strategic partnership. President Mahama said this when he inaugurated the police council at Flagstaff House in Accra. Vice President Kwesi Imisa-Afa is the chairman of the council. Meanwhile, the police administration has directed all regional commanders to submit strategic plans on how to control traffic and other criminal activities ahead of the Christmas festivities. The director of the MTTU at the police headquarters, ACP Awini, in an interview with Radio Ghana, said the police will strictly enforce all laws on the road to save lives. The 7th ECOWAS trade fair has ended in Accra, with a call on heads of member states to tackle challenges facing West African businesses. The Commissioner of Trade, Mines and Free Movement at the ECOWAS Commission, Hamid Ahmed, said ECOWAS has to restructure its administrative processes due to challenges that were identified during the meeting to remove barriers that work against the sub-region. An Accra Circuit Court has granted a Kumasi-based owner of King Faisal Football Club, Alhaji Karim Abdulgunsa, a 20,000 cedi bail with one surety. The court last Thursday issued a bench warrant for Alhaji Gunsa for failing to produce a human trafficking suspect he bailed for trial. Alhaji Gunsa appeared in court on his own volition ahead of the substantive case.
Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Carl, let's go to Barbara for some stories.
Thank you. President John Mahama has charged the newly constituted police council chaired by Vice President Kwesi Imisa-Afa to work diligently to address the logistics and other challenges facing the police service. He tasks the council to also guide the police administration to redefine its strategic direction to be consistent with the ever-increasing demands on contemporary day-to-day policing. Seth Eya reports.
President Mahama, until he was sworn in as president in July last year, was the chairman of the police council. During his tenure, the police service received enormous logistics support and improved conditions of work. President Mahama acknowledged that, in spite of the achievements of the previous council, a lot more needs to be done to realize the UN police civilian ratio of 1 to 500.
I therefore challenge this council to do even better than the previous one. our country is going through reforms and revolution in terms of governance and democracy. Good governance issues behove us on the principles of good management practices and leadership. As our nation embraces these democratic tenets and deepens our constitutional democracy, so is it the responsibility of the Police Council, and for that matter the administration, to redefine its strategic direction to be consistent with the ever-increasing demands on contemporary day policing. That strategic leadership provides the vision, direction and purpose for growth and context for the success of the organization. It is clear that the challenges facing the police leadership in Ghana are huge but are surmountable.
President Mahama praised the police administration for shifting from being reactive to proactive policing.
I wish to commend the present police administration for the good work they have done. The administration, under the distinguished leadership of the Inspector General of Police, Mohamed Amen Alassan, has amply demonstrated that the police has visionary leaders to bring about the needed reformation in the service. I want to encourage you to consolidate the gains that you have made and avoid complacency.
The chairman of the Police Council, Vice President Emisasa, said the council will work to improve the lot of the police and law and order.
The responsibility of the Ghana Police, principally to maintain law and order and to prevent and detect crime, so that the people of this country can go around doing their legitimate business without any fear for their lives. In the last couple of months, police visibility has increased and there has been change in the way the public observes the police. The community policing strategy seems to be working, and I hope that giving us this privilege, we'll be able to contribute to further enhancing the peace and security of this country.
Members of the council, immediately after they were sworn in, had an emergency meeting to chart an effective succession plan for the police administration. Seth Iyia, reporting for Radio Ghana.
Well, we will follow up this story later in our bulletin. Now to our next story. The decision by the government to absorb 25% of the electricity tariff announced recently by the Public Utility and Regulatory Commission and the standoff between organized labor and the PURC over the hikes in the utility tariffs has been given various interpretations by analysts. The government had to review the 78.9% electricity tariff following public outcry against the increment. Organized labor, led by the TUC, had earlier threatened a national strike if the government did not reduce the tariff. Attempts by the major stakeholders to persuade the PURC to review the water and electricity tariffs could not work as the PURC and organized labor took entrenched positions. To labor consultant Austin Gamme, the situation goes beyond politics as it has something more to do with our educational system. And Mr. Gamme has just joined me on the line. Good evening, Mr. Gamme. You're welcome to the program.
Good evening, Agatha.
I'm very well, sir. Now, what are your reasons for attributing the issues surrounding the increase in utility tariffs to education? Can you explain further?
Yeah, thank you. Agatha, all these years that I have also come to live in this country, of course, as a citizen, for well over 64 years today, I have come to realize that we are into an adversarial kind of relationship in all spheres of our national life. And that is most regrettable. And I cannot help but to attribute it to our educational system, because it does appear as if that is what we are brought up to appreciate. I must have my way. I think that my point of view cannot be understood, so I must find any other means to achieve it. I have taken a position. There is no way I can change my mind, and that is it. In this particular case of organized labor and URC, as you rightly said in your intro a moment ago, both sides took entrenched positions. And obviously, we were going to be the sufferers. Even though they might both have a genuine concern that they want to raise, the approach has always been embedded in the way we have been brought up. And I think that is the most unfortunate and regrettable. And that's what I mean by that.
Then in that case, what should be the best way of going about any problem?
You see, the reality is that recently I was, on stage teaching some colleagues somewhere. And whenever they want to engage in a session, in a brainstorming session, then it is assumed as though the brainstorming session itself is a decision on its own. But that is strange and unheard of. And I've listened to many notable people in this country, whether they are people in academia, whether they are people in opposition, people in government, people in the clergy, whatever. They keep on engaging and in a brainstorming session, some of them assume that this is a fair complaint. I hear it in the media all the time when you are hosting various programs. I do not mean your station right now. I mean various other, stations. And they assume that whatever is being said should be swallowed by the other, party without raising a voice, especially because they think that they have a case and they might be listened to. That is most unfortunate. And therefore, I think that we have to change our way of thinking, our way of doing things, especially when it comes to how to resolve, relationship, matters, how to resolve conflicts. It's so entrenched in every aspect of our national life. And I think that if we do not change this kind of mentality in the shortest possible time, I think that we'll live to regret it as a people. So my call is that our educational system will have to be completely overhauled. People will have to appreciate the fact that we live as interdependent people. We live as people who must be seen supporting each other. You may have a point of view. I may have my point of view. How do we engage in a conversation that will bring a solution that satisfies both sides? If it's something that is beyond, is a criminal matter, or it's a matter that will require a winner and a loser, then we must describe it, that this is a matter for winner and loser, then that's the end of it. But if it's a question of something that affects the nation, that we must find a national solution to it, then we must find the appropriate way of handling it, and the way we have been doing it so far.
We will come to how we can use ADR to help address some of these challenges, but some people think the situation has nothing to do with our system of education. Rather, it has to do with our culture.
Well, culture and education, they are bedfellows. Culture is a way of life. Culture is the way we act towards one another, the way we identify ourselves. I don't mean by dancing agbaja and babobo and some other adua and so forth and so on. That is not the issue. That is just education and culture by way of dancing and demonstrating to people our identity through dancing and so forth and so on. But when it comes to culture, it permeates through a certain change in transitional approach. And if that is the way culture is, then we must change it. And culture is dynamic. It's not limited. So I think the point here is that culture and education are bedfellows. And so we have to find a way of understanding this and properly integrate it into the national psyche. You mentioned ADR, appropriately so. Otherwise, we'll be just laughing on the right side or on the bad side of our mouth.
Now, let's look at government's decision to absorb 25% of the electricity tariff. Some are saying that the government is usurping the powers of the PURC. Is that the case?
Well, it might on the surface be like that, but the reality is that government is government, and government is confronted with a situation beyond their control. They are being threatened by a state of demonstrations and strike action, and which legitimate and wise government would want to sit down and have a 4-day no work, even though we are working, our productivity level is bad already, and now we are not even going to work at all. Clearly, what it means is that we are destroying the nation, we are compounding our situation the more. And so I least got surprised when I heard on Sunday that it's been reviewed. Government has really, really very little choice than to do what they have done. PURC will have to take this in their strides and reconcile the situation. Fortunately, it's not about a wholesale sort of reduction. It's an absorption of a subsidy of a sort. And therefore, it's not a stupid, decision, as it were. It's just a wise way of calming down nerves and taking steps to ensure that we do not repeat these things again. Fortunately, organized labor agreed that these things should be properly absorbed through the automatic adjustment system, so we do not face this kind of difficulties on ourselves in the future. So we have to take it on our stride.
Mr. Gami, I ask you to hold the line on for me. Stephen Balado Men, who was the former MP of Ahavuano South and chairman of the Select Committee on Education, and is also joining the discussions. Good evening, Mr. Balado Men, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good evening.
Well, I'm sure you heard Mr. Gami saying that our educational system trains us to adopt or take and train position in solving conflicts and our differences. Do you agree with this? Could our system...
To a very large extent, I don't agree. Because rather, our educational system trains us to be united and to see one another as friends and brothers. You see, if you study our educational system carefully, the boarding system that Dr. Nkrumah introduced helped this nation a lot when it comes to unifying the nation. It is that system of education which could send somebody from Accra to Navrongo or Tamale or to the Volta region, and from the Volta region to the Brown-Ahafo region, from the Brown-Ahafo region to the Western region. That opened us up to learn and understand one another. So you see that in Ghana, it is the idea of tribalism that has tend to divide us. It's a recent phenomenon. Other than that, we lived together as one people who didn't know our differences. If we want to look at our educational system, look, some of the activities we do in our educational system is sporting activities, intercolleges. You found schools traveling from Northern Region to Accra for interco. All these things were training us to see one another as one people and be able to resolve our, we know the positive side of sports.
But looking at the recent impasse between organized labor and the PURC, there were entrained positions, organized labor taking one position, and then the PURC also taking one position.
That cannot be attributed to our educational system. Our educational system does not train us to be to take entrenched positions when there are issues. Even if you remember, debating societies and debating societies in our schools trained us to accept defeat in terms of argument. You see, so it is just taking entrenched position and the other taking entrenched position. It's natural. It's natural and normal in a democratic dispensation. People who have their principles and they believe, when they believe in their principles, they wouldn't want to just give in to their principles. It doesn't mean that our educational system is, you know, bad or anything. Are you saying that all over the world, sometimes people don't take to their positions and trend positions? Look at what happened recently in the United States about this Obama thing. What entrenched position was greater than that? If people are sticking to their principles, I don't think that is anything that can be said to be a bad thing given us by our educational system. Rather, our educational system is teaching us that if you have a principle, keep it, stand by it.
Well,
and what if we would rather want to attribute something to anything? I think our culture, rather. And when we talk about culture, I heard him talking about Agbaja and Adwa. A culture is not dancing and...
Yes, he said it's not dancing Agbaja and Co.
Yes, I want to say that culture is all about what the individual does. If you look at elements of culture, our language, our belief system, our food, even our clothing, look at when the typical Ashanti person dresses, a man, when he dresses and he's going, you see him, he walks majestically with confidence, and if you don't understand the culture, you may jump to conclusion that he's proud. But no, that is their culture. If you went to the north and you, on a market day, you saw a man come to market with a cudgel on his neck, around his neck, you think that this man is violent. Why is he carrying a cudgel in the market? No, but that is part of their culture. So our culture rather leads us to our belief system. And some of the belief systems we have, for instance, that in my language, if you take my language, the Basari language, Uja, they call a man Uja. We call a man Uja. And Uja comes from the word Ja. Ja means fight. So Uja means a fighter. So in that culture, for you to be accepted as a man, you must portray yourself to be a fighter. You don't turn your back to somebody who strikes you. No, not in the north. That is why sometimes some of these things that happen there, if you are in the south and you are not there, you will not understand fully what it is.
Very well.
You know?
Mr. Bala, Domeni, earlier
so
you
our
said...
Our culture, our belief systems, our values, some of all these things play on our behavior.
Well,
yes.
Earlier you said something about sticking to your principles, but the question I'll ask is, do you stick to your principles if it does not lie in the interest of the public or society?
Who tells you that me giving in to your principle is what is in the public interest? Who determines the public interest? Who determines the public interest? Is there a defined public interest when it comes to people, you know, sharing ideas? What you may call public principle, like the TUC, let's use that as a typical example. The PURC, they were saying that they needed so much to be able to serve the public well. That is, they brought in public interest, right? Then the TUC and other Ghanaians were saying, no, that is not in the public interest because we don't have the money that would enable us to pay what we want. That will not be in our interest. So the two each had what he called public interest. You think the TUC was fighting for the leader of the TUC was fighting for his personal interest? No, that was public interest.
All right.
And the PURC was also saying that, give us so much so that we can give you better service. That is also public interest. So when TUC believes us and PURC believes us, it doesn't mean that any of them is doing anything bad against the nation.
Right.
It's just cross-fertilization of ideas, and then they strike a balance like they've done today.
All right. Mr. Baladomene, I'll come back to you, but let me go back to the other line. And Mr. Gama, your response to the issues raised by Mr. Baladomene?
Oh, he made a very some important points that can be taken into consideration when these matters are being looked at. From purely an ADR point of view, the anger is coming from, years away from my point of view. But having said so, at the end of the day, assuming that government took a position that, well, PURC is PURC under the Constitution, and organized labor is organized labor with national interest also, you know, where do we stand? Assuming the strike should come on, assuming tomorrow is 18th, and they have to go on strike, who will be the loser? And what is national interest in this matter? So,
Mr. Baladomene, hold on, I'll ask you to respond. Yeah.
If we have a system in place where people can sit down and be assisted to resolve their differences without anyone in it, whereas all of them are seeing that they are speaking in the interest of the nation, and now the whole nation is coming to a halt with its attendant consequences. Who is the loser? Who is the winner? Has both parties gained? I don't think so at this stage. But, like I said earlier, we made very important points that can be taken on board where appropriate. But when it comes to these matters, the reality is that from purely AAR point of view, it's completely out of the way. And it's because we have not been brought up by this. We have also lived in the system for long.
Mr. Gamet, could you reposition yourself well?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Uh-huh. We've all lived in the system for a very long time, and we know how our forefathers, our chiefs, and the evidence is clear. There's a numerous conflicts in this nation today. Is it because of culture? Obviously, no. Our culture is supposed to be an identification of who we are, like my friend Honorable Balado rightly said. But the truth is that when it comes to resolving differences, it's because of lack of the right knowledge of the processes to resolving differences. We take to entrenched position. And you hold this side, I hold this side, we'll pull. The result will be curfews and therefore unproductive kind of, situation. You'll get death, maiming, and related matters. We all see, we read about it on a daily basis. But that is not the way it's supposed to go.
So,
and I think that is it.
So the debate is that has our education system at least played a role in getting people in negotiation take entrenched position, which Mr. Baladomene disagrees?
Not necessarily so, but the reality is that it's not total. I'm a teacher too, and some of you are my students. And so what I'm trying to say is that I will not train people in ADR and you go exhibiting contrary things in helping people to resolve their differences. I will not sit between two parties. At the end of the day, if it is mediation, there will not be a winner, there will not be a loser, there will be both parties gaining. If it's arbitration, then we all know it's arbitration. It will produce a winner and a loser. If it's a court case, it will produce a winner and a loser. But that is what the world enjoys. And I'm not against it. But I'm saying that the most civilized way of resolving matter is either you are negotiating, you are mediating, and you are facilitating these processes to bring about, because we are heavily interdependent in our communities. I agree again with Honorable Balado that the original intent of having boarding people from various, regions and districts and so on and so on, is to see the fusion and integration of people so that they end up into, friendliness and intermarriages and so forth and so on. But that is not enough. At the end of the day, we are heavily interdependent in the workplaces, heavily interdependent in our social systems, and we offend each other from time to time. And it is the way we resolve these differences that matters. But for now, the way we go about it in this country is to produce a winner and a loser. Mm. That's why we still have the conflicts all over the place. Chieftaincy cases, land cases, labor-related cases, and so forth and so on.
All right.
So we need to change our way of doing it. I know which countries that have changed it. The same program I'm talking about, I know countries that are well-known and they are doing the same thing. Unfortunately, here we take to entrenched positions. Whatever we know is final and final. I mean, that's why we are not learning.
Well, Mr. Balado Menu.
Hello?
Yes. So,
You see, Honorable Game, as an ADR advocate and practitioner, I agree with him. The fundamental principle of ADR is win-win situation. But if you look at our culture and our history, which is, in fact, embedded in our culture, we didn't start with win-win situation. If you look at our history, tribes went to war against tribes. And captured them and ruled over them and took their lands, and that is our history and our culture, you see. So the ADR thing is a recent phenomenon where people have come to realize that the win-lose situation is not helping modern development. So we should now be turning towards win-win situation, which brings about ADR, and that is what ADR seeks to achieve. And in fact, if the world would go by ADR, win-win situation, you will find that the world will be a peaceful place to live, because there is a problem, we go to settle, I don't lose totally, and I don't win totally. You also, you don't win totally, you don't lose totally. At least you go home with some wins. I also go home with some wins. And that is the best, the ideal situation, you know. But the ideal, I don't know how many societies have attained the ideal situation. We may be getting closer to the ideal situation, but no system has ever got to the ideal situation. So I want to say that you were talking about if government had stuck to its grounds and organized labor has stuck to its grounds, who will be the loser? No, demonstrations, you were saying those things are constitutional. Demonstrations are also constitutional. except that at the end of the day, when people have demonstrated, then they go to a round table and sit down and jaw and come out with consensus. And that is what happened recently between this PURC thing. You see, if there had been strike at all, if they had been 18th and the organized labor had gone on strike, at the end of the day, there would have been a round table meeting where issues would be ironed out. That is why some of us, when we hear that a group is not happy, we expect the authorities to move in quickly.
All right.
The ADR works when the situation is at its embryonic stage. You see, if you look on for the what was like a friendly fire to get into a crisis, then ADR will suffer before you can achieve anything.
All right.
So early warning systems. We must take early warning systems seriously.
All right.
If we see that there is red flag, we shouldn't wait until it becomes a full-blown conflict before we go in. If, I assure you, if you allow the conflict to become full-blown, he is an ADR person. You will find it very difficult to achieve your aim, if at all.
We want to,
at the beginning of the problem, you see warning, early warning signs, and you go in, ADR is likely to succeed better than allowing the problem to get full blown.
Many thanks for your time with us, Mr. Baladu Menu. Stephen Baladu Menu was a former MP of North Southern, chairman of the Select Committee on Education. And coming back to you, Gami, about the point that Mr. Baladu Menu raised, did we pick the early warning signal to prevent the deadlock that characterized the organized labor and PUR issue on the utility tariffs? Hello, Mr. Gamai. Well, it appears we lost Mr. Gamai on the line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Ernest Latte's former SRC president, Africa University College of Communication, UCC. Good evening, Ernest, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on your show.
Ernest, if you listen to our conversation, a labor consultant thinks our system of education could be a major factor to our inability to find a way out to the recent increment in tariff, especially he thinks the education system rather trains us to take entrenched positions on issues. So what is your take on this?
Well, I think that I've listened to Mr. Agame, and I think that for me, I disagree with the submission that when it comes to resolution of issues, we normally take entrenched position. The thing is that our system of education actually trains us to espouse the liberal means of resolving conflict. And when I say that, it means that we always adopt the mediation approach where we sit down with the stakeholders who are involved in the issues to chart out the very very particular problems that are involved and also to know the way forward. Now, in terms of student leadership, for example, and let me tie in the leadership of students. When you go to the university like this, you are taken to orientation. And what the orientation actually does is that it helps you to know the structures within the school. Now, when you have a problem within the institution, you address it to the appropriate quarters. You don't really jump into, let's say, the aggressive approach, which is demonstration and also giving your school a bad press.
But only that's what we often see. Students often resort to violent or militant approach to get their grievances addressed.
No, it's never true. You know, we have two forms of approach in resolving issues, and that is the liberal approach, where you sit down with management of the institution to actually table your grievances between them and look at the way forward. Now, if you table your grievances before management and they feel that one way or the other they cannot do something about it, and because you are the student leader who is leading the student front, you feel that pressure is mounting on you, then you will take the aggressive approach, which is demonstration and all that. It's not usually the case that you take the aggressive approach, which is demonstration. It's only when the liberal means still.
So, in your view, how best do we address issues or challenges when they crop up?
I think that is the negotiation approach, where we involve the stakeholders, and then we both listen to each other and then weigh the issues that it is, and also look at the best solution that best satisfies each party that is involved.
And now, let's look at the issue where the government says it has absorbed 5% of the electricity tariff, but is silent on water tariff, and hitherto organized labor has threatened to go on strike to get their grievances addressed. What is your recommendation for addressing that challenge?
I think, first of all, it's a great intervention by the government, because it's really difficult times in Ghana, and I'm recently doing my national service, and I just had my September allowance just today, and my colleagues from other regions told me that they have had yes, and some have even begun process of taking the October allowance. This is a rhetoric that we need to address on another day. But I think that, well, TURC and then TUC, they just have to sit themselves up and also maybe negotiate and then come to a very concrete position on this issue and how best they think that it will best serve the whole nation, rather than looking at them. I think that what is happening is power play, because TURC thinks that it is the right authority to call the shots, and TUC also think the same way. I think that it's about time that we close the ranks and also look at the issues as
right.
It is.
Ernest, we want to thank you for your time with us. Ernest Latte is a former SRC president, AUCC. It's Behind the Knees live on Radio Ghana. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Should the girl at the basic school level who gets pregnant be punished? And what kind of punishment should it be? Ghanaian Times report quotes a Deputy Director of Education in charge of Inspectorate Division, Bernadette Banowi, suggesting that girls at the basic level of education who become pregnant should be punished. According to her, government is investing so much in education, and that investment cannot go to waste if any girl who is supposed to be in school loosely allow themselves to get pregnant. Now, let's go to the phone lines and talk to the MP for Dafema Buse Issa and the chairman of the Parliamentary-led Committee on Education, Matthias Poza, on his view on this suggesting. Good evening, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, Mr.
And good evening to your listeners.
Well, do you welcome the suggestion that girls at the basic school level who gets pregnant should be punished?
I don't think that is the policy of the ministry or GS. So whoever might have said that, I beg to differ. I think might be her personal opinion.
But a personal opinion, but why should that suggestion be thought of in the first place? I mean, is getting pregnant at the basic level of education not traumatic in itself?
Well, as a matter of fact, too, I don't think that is the policy anywhere, that I suspect the film might be airing her own view or his or her own views. Because as far as I know, and I've been quite old in the system, pregnant girls should rather be counseled by the head of the institution, after which the parents are approached, counseled, and what happens next is to make sure that this girl is withdrawn let her deliver safely at home, and then encourage to really take care of the child and comes back or gets back to school, but in a different institution. That's what used to happen many years ago, and I think it's still the rule.
But how do we deal with such a situation? That's to get school girls to focus more on their education and not allowing themselves to get pregnant or be used.
I'm saying this, it's not a new thing. It's not new, and it used to happen. It has always been happening. Pregnant girls, school girls, is nothing new. And I think that it's just one of those things that happen in any circumstances. You cannot always have a 100% situation. Some of these girls get pregnant out of ignorance. And I think the least that we can do is to rather advise them and counsel them properly so that they do not repeat it or others do not repeat it. In order to save them from stigma, they are advised or they are sent to other schools in order to at least to recover from the shock before they come back.
You said it's not new, so it means it's something that keeps happening. But how come we are not finding any solution to it?
Well, I think that education is... the authorities are trying to find a solution to it by encouraging family life education. You know, hitherto it was a taboo to mention sex and the organs and other things at school. I don't know how old you are, but some time ago in the 70s or even 80s. But now the policy has changed. Children are advised. Family life education is no more a taboo, and teachers are free to educate the children on these things, on sex education.
Would you then say that sex education is very well integrated into the school curricula?
That should be the case. That should be the case, because with knowledge, children will not get themselves pregnant.
But then again, let's look at another issue, especially when the suggestion that the girl should be punished. And then the question we ask is, how about the one who impregnated the girl? Especially more so when we have teachers impregnating these school children.
The laws are there. If a teacher impregnates a student, the law, the teacher gets, what used to happen, the teacher gets terminated for some time. Yeah. His appointment is terminated for some time before he gets back. He gets back to the classroom. But then, as a matter of fact, school girls should stay away from it. And that's not the norm, really. And that's why I'm saying that with education, proper education, perhaps we will tend to see less and less of these incidents at school.
So how best can we get school girls from falling into this terrible situation?
We teachers and all those stakeholders should be more interested in the welfare of the girl child. Like parents should be more open in discussing sex issues with their children, and teachers as well as school children, when they get to know the danger involved, might stay away from this while they are so young.
Well, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Yeah.
Matthias Poza is the MP for Dafyama Busi Isa and is chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Education. It's going back to our story on should a girl child at a basic school level who gets pregnant be punished. Leslie Tete is the coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign. Good evening, Leslie, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you. Good evening to your listeners, too.
Leslie, is punishing the basic school girl who get pregnant the best way to stop other girls from falling victim?
No, that is not the way to go. Number one, we as a county are trying to encourage girls' education. We have targets of achieving parity. And so we want to encourage more girls to get into school. The second thing is that according to our laws, girls who are below 18 years of age are minors. And they should not be blamed when they get pregnant. And so it would be wrong for us to punish them when they get pregnant. There are more issues that has to do with a young girl getting pregnant when no one is expecting that. And so those are the things that we are supposed to work at. That is why the Girls Education Unit has appointed girl child coordinators in the various districts who support the schools with the issues of girls and their issues around reproductive health and understanding things like that. So I don't think that the solution is to punish girls who get pregnant. When we do that, we are going against the very things that we have set out to do as a country.
Then how best can we get these school girls from falling into this terrible situation? How best can we help them?
We must educate them. You have seen campaigns that are being run by various civil society groups and even the ministry itself, where they try to hold what they call the girls' camps, and they bring the girls together and teach them some of these basic things. Let them understand their self-worth. Let them understand what the danger signs are when it comes to some of these things. And so there's education for the girl child. It's not just teaching in the classroom. There are other social factors that are preventing the girls from concentrating on their school and getting the best out of it. And these are some of the reasons why we have the girls' education unit and we have officers in the district who are supposed to work with the schools to help the girls understand these issues and help them to focus on their work. Of course, we may not achieve 100%, but if we have challenges, the remedy is to educate these girls and intensify our efforts rather than to punish them.
Now, what should be the role of parents in this?
Very, very important. Parents have a big role to play because all starts from the home. But the challenge we have in our country is that a lot of our parents themselves don't understand these issues. And if they do, they don't even have the courage to help in issues like sex education for their children. And so I think that some of the social organizations and religious groups could also help in getting parents oriented on their roles and their responsibilities so that they could complement what is going on, or rather what is happening in the schools or what the schools are doing can complement what parents are supposed to do.
Now, Leslie, let's look at the situation where the teacher who is supposed to teach the schoolgirl sex education is the one who is impregnating the girl.
Yes, that is totally wrong and unacceptable. And that is why we support the efforts of the Ghana Education Service to strictly enforce and implement the teacher's code of conduct, and also to review it and put measures that are more practicable in terms of dealing with teachers. teachers who flout these things. In the first place, no teacher is supposed to have any kind of canal knowledge with any of the students or pupils. Neither are they supposed to get engaged in any suggestive things with them. And so any teacher who does this has flouted the law. And secondly, anyone who defiles a minor has committed a criminal offense and must be handed over to the law. And so those issues, I think, should be separated from just an issue of a teacher getting involved with girls. It is a criminal issue and must be picked up at that level. Then the managers of the schools and the managers of teachers should also ensure that teachers are kept in line. And like I said at first, I think the main thing is that teaching is a profession. Every profession have their professional ethics, and it's clear in their ethics that teachers are not to get involved with girls. When this happens, we think that the law must take its course.
And briefly, why do females appear to be at the receiving end when issues of pregnancy comes up, especially at the basic school level?
Well, it is simply because of their role, their natural role or their biological role. They can get pregnant, boys cannot get pregnant. But beyond that, I think that is also an issue that is deeply rooted in our cultural beliefs and practices. We think that it is natural for a girl of a certain age to be active sexually and get involved. But these things are changing. And I think that with a lot of education that is going on, with some of the legal provisions that have been made, we should push our effort and get people to tune their minds out of some of these entrenched positions.
Leslie, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Leslie Teta is a coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition. It's behind the news. Let's read some of your text messages. Antonio says, I hope Ghanaians would not complain if we start experiencing doomso. Daniel Benedict Kosipa, UCC, says, I think the intervention by the government to absorb the reduced utility tariffs is in the right direction, but I think it could be reduced than this. To those who are criticizing the government for interfering in the works of the PURC, is rather unfortunate. Or kudos to Kofi Asamoah. And Fela of Elembele says, bravo to PURC and government for listening to us. Now TEC has called this demonstration off. Well, AFAC do the same. Long live Ghana. Long live President John Mahama. And Jowaki says, a very good evening to you. May God continue to guide President Mahama to take every bit of our complaints into consideration. In fact, we are proud of him. Benedict Daniel Kosipa again says, oh, after the reconstitution of the new police board, what next in their performance? Oh, the usual extortion of one Ghana city from drivers will continue on our roads. God have mercy on us. Napoleon from Tumusankofa Bay says, the 25% absorption of utility tariff by the government shows that President Mahama is a listening president. And Jinsud Rashidin once says, a reduction of 25% on utilities portray accountable President Mahama is towards the citizens. God bless John Mahama, the NDC party, and the country. Kumpo Derek John from Kwantakese says, many thanks to President Mahama for the reduction of the tariffs. Ibrahim Diallo from Takwa says, our confidence in President Mahama is still unshaken, as we know he will deliver on his promises. But personally, I'm not happy with the government decision to bow to Kofi Asamoah's hypocrisy. I think President Mahama should remain focused and decisive. We, the masses, are solidly behind him. Andrew Manga says, all Ghanaians always contribute their widow's might into a fund for the gallant veterans. And Arab Mohammed Ejazongo in Kumasi says, behind the news, you are doing a great job. Keep it up. Many thanks for all your text messages. And this is where we end tonight's edition of the program. Roxanne Wood controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Siedu, Bright Agama, Edmund Tete, Phyllis Kofi, and Celestine Anzi. Barbara Yakubu read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely evening.